Florida Governor Ron DeSantis drops out of the U.S. presidential race.
I am today suspending my campaign.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reiterates his opposition to the two-state solution.
The state of Israel must have security control over all the territory west of the Jordan River.
And getting money for a tech startup is hard anytime, anywhere. In Nigeria, it's now even more difficult.
Prominent startups such as 54Gene, LaserPay, Vibra, Payday, and Hitch went out of business.
Today is Monday, January 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has ended his campaign for the Republican presidential nomination on the eve of the New Hampshire primary and endorsed Donald Trump.
I can't ask our supporters to volunteer their time and donate their resources if we don't have a clear path to victory. Accordingly, I am today suspending my campaign. I'm proud to have delivered on 100% of my promises, and I will not stop now. It's clear to me that a majority of Republican primary voters want to give Donald Trump another chance. They watch his presidency get stymied by relentless resistance, and they see Democrats using lawfare this day to attack him. Well, I've had disagreements with Donald Trump, such as on the coronavirus pandemic and his elevation of Anthony Fauci. Trump is superior to the current incumbent, Joe Biden. That is clear. I signed a pledge to support the Republican nominee, and I will honor that pledge. He has my endorsement because we can't go back to the old Republican guard of yesteryear, a repackage formed of warmed-over corporatism that Nikki Haley represents.
Shortly after that announcement, former President Trump announced the news to his supporters at an event in New Hampshire.
We just got some word that one of our opponents, a very capable person, is dropping out of the race, Ron DeSantis. And Ron is dropping out, and he... In doing so, he endorsed us.
Early on in the race for president, DeSantis became the darling of the Not Trump movement. He was seen as a Trump-like candidate, younger, and for a while, seemingly an heir apparent capable of carrying Trumpism forward. Joining us now is Fernand Amandi, the managing partner of Ben Dixon and Amandi from Miami in DeSantis' home state of Florida. His firm is thought by many to be a leading multilingual and multi-ethnic public opinion research and consulting firm involved in many elections in more than 30 countries and 20 languages. So, what happened?
The fundamental problem that I saw with the DeSantis candidacy was it was indistinguishable from the Trump candidacy, except that he was not Donald Trump. And in this day and age where the Republican Party is really the party of Trump, overseen by Trump, it's hard to choose someone not named Trump when Trump is running himself for the nomination. I think fundamentally that's what ended DeSantis' candidacy earlier than expected.
They're trapped in a very, very bad place if you're not Donald Trump, because in order to get the nomination, you have to get Republicans to vote for you. It's Nikki Haley's problem now, isn't it?
It really is. Ever since Donald Trump's wholesale and hostile takeover of the Republican Party in 2016, he has morphed this new incarnation of the party into his image and into his policy, which is really to not really have a consistent policy. And, you know, I'm not the one to brand it as such, but I think there is more than enough evidence to suggest that today's Republican Party is a personality cult under Donald Trump. And that's why, as long as the leader of that personality cult continues to see himself as the head of that entity, which in this case Trump does, there is no dislodging him.
Back to DeSantis. So he has a term as Florida governor to complete. He's got 3 years left. Then what? Is he done, or could he potentially make a national comeback after that?
Well, it all depends on what Donald Trump does and how things turn out for Trump. Again, you can't have a personality cult and just have that come to an end because of the ambition of others. I think if Trump runs and loses, he is not just going to go away. There's going to be the factor of who follows, who is the designated choice in the future. I certainly think DeSantis thinks he's viable for the future. Part of the reason why he's getting out now before the New Hampshire vote is to not have another disastrous loss, which would be the same reason he's not competing in South Carolina, and to try and preserve that. But he's going to have to contend with now what will be, I guess, 16 years of thwarted Republican presidential ambitions in deference to Donald Trump. So I don't see him having any easy path in the future to the presidency on the Republican side if he seeks to run for the nomination in the future.
So again, he's got 3 years or thereabouts to finish as governor of Florida. Does this loss, this performance in the presidential election, impact his ability to govern Florida?
Look, I mean, I think fundamentally the question now happens, did DeSantis harm himself so much that he has lowered his standing even in Florida as the returning governor? And I think he has, to be candid with you. I mean, his whole iron fist style of rule where he was able to bend the legislature as well, I think was partially because he was seen and perceived to be as someone who could be the Republican nominee. And that's obviously gone up in smoke. And he has really hurt himself, I think, in the process. So I think that's going to affect his relationships and his ability to do things in Florida. I think you'll see more opposition and defiance in the Florida legislature.
Fernand Amondi, the managing partner of Miami-based Ben Dixon and Amondi. This week's Republican primary election will still be held in New Hampshire. It's a small U.S. state in the nation's northeast. But without DeSantis, it becomes now a two-person race between Trump and former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley. VOA's Carolyn Presutti is there and has this preview for us.
Biden, 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 Biden.
Not what you'd expect to hear hours before a presidential primary. But this is the quirky state of New Hampshire.
Hey, everybody, how are you?
Where President Joe Biden is not on Tuesday's ballot. A move by national Democratic leaders, which some consider a snub.
People said, we're going to put that aside and we're going to support Joe Biden because we all know Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. And the most important thing we can do to save democracy is to stop Donald Trump.
This is from a 1992 convention.
Ray Buckley chairs the New Hampshire Democratic Party. But on Tuesday, Biden will not get his vote.
Since my election as chair, I've written in Jimmy Carter every single time to show that I am completely unbiased.
Buckley has voted for Democratic incumbent presidents in the past, but this time...
We were in shock and stunned.
The Democratic National Committee demoted New Hampshire from its historic spot as the first state primary in favor of South Carolina, with its more diverse voters. Angry state party officials scheduled the primary anyway.
We are going to the polls on Tuesday.
And Biden supporters began a write-in campaign. On the Republican side, a different kind of drama. In a windy minus 10 degrees Celsius, this is the line 4 hours before a Donald Trump event.
We love the Trumpster. He's he fights for us.
How many wars did we have when he was president? Everybody was happy. Everybody was making money.
Former President Donald Trump is pulling in the crowds at his rallies and polling at just over 50% among New Hampshire voters. Former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley is at 35% in the Boston Globe poll.
She needs to sway me, so I'm open-minded to whatever it is she has to say.
Like Denise Montminy, many in line to see Haley are independents or Democrats who can vote on a Republican ballot here.
I'd like to hear a little less war hawkish rhetoric from her in terms of her stance on Ukraine and Israel-Palestine conflict.
Analysts say New Hampshire Republicans who are fiscal conservatives interested in lower taxes and smaller government could be Haley's last chance to stop Trump.
If she can't in a state that is tailor-made for that, I think it's fair to ask, well, what is the next step? What is the state where she will have another chance to beat Trump? And the number of states I can come up with is a very, very, very short one.
On Tuesday night, we find out whether New Hampshire voters offer any surprises. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets in towns and cities in Germany on Sunday as the country enters a second week of nationwide protests against the right-wing Alternative for Germany party. Rallies were held in Berlin, Munich, and Cologne, as well as in more traditional AfD voting strongholds in eastern Germany, like Leipzig and Dresden, and turnout in many places far higher than expected. Egypt will not allow any threat to Somalia, President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi said on Sunday, after Ethiopia said it would consider recognizing an independence claim by Somaliland in a deal that would give it access to a seaport. The remarks were the strongest yet on the issue by Egypt, which already has frosty relations with Ethiopia, and a sign that Cairo may get involved in the dispute. North Korea said Sunday that Russian President Vladimir Putin expressed his willingness to visit the North at an unspecified early date as the countries continue to align in the face of their separate and intensifying confrontations with the United States. Russia reports dozens of people are dead after a Ukrainian city occupied by Kremlin forces came under shelling. The blasts happened as a Russian chemical transport terminal also came under fire. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has this story.
Bodies and burned-out cars litter the streets outside a typically busy market in the Russia-held Ukrainian city of Donetsk. According to the regional Russia-installed government, at least 25 people were killed, with another 20 injured in an artillery attack Moscow blamed on Ukraine. The Russia-appointed head of the region, Denis Pushilin, says emergency services and forensic specialists were working to collect fragments of the weapons used in the attack. Ukraine has so far not commented on the blast, and the Russian claims could not be independently verified by the Associated Press. Donetsk is one of four Ukrainian regions at least partially annexed by Russia in recent years. The United Nations General Assembly widely condemns the move. The Donetsk attack comes as firefighters battle blazes at a Russian chemical transport terminal located on a site run by Russia's second-largest natural gas producer, Novatek, some 165 kilometers away from St. Petersburg. The company blamed the blast on external influence. The regional governor reported no casualties. U.S. President Joe Biden has pledged unwavering American support for Ukraine in the war against Russia, but he has encountered obstacles and a divided Congress, with many Republicans questioning ongoing support and taking a softer stance on Russia than their Democratic counterparts. Former U.S. President Donald Trump told CNN in May of 2023 that if he were reelected, he could end the Russia-Ukraine war in 24 hours. Trump remains his party's front runner for the country's presidential election later this year, despite facing some 91 felony charges in court. Speaking to Britain's Channel 4 News, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called Trump's rhetoric very dangerous, citing a lack of any clear plan to end the conflict. Zelensky says he worries a Trump-brokered solution to the war won't involve Ukraine. Following recent Russian hypersonic missile attacks on Ukraine's two largest cities, Ukrainian civilians are again answering the call to military service. More than 20,000 civilians have participated in this course, teaching tactical and first aid skills since the beginning of the war. Most are women. One area resident and trainee told the Associated Press that more people training means the sooner this war will end. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Sunday rejected conditions presented by Hamas to end the war and release hostages that would include Israel's complete withdrawal and leaving Hamas in power in Gaza. He also once again this weekend rejected a two-state solution.
The state of Israel must have security control over all the territory west of the Jordan River. This is a necessary condition, and if it conflicts with the idea of Palestinian sovereignty, what to do?
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Sunday denounced Israel for what he called the, quote, heartbreaking deaths of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, and said it was unacceptable to resist statehood for the Palestinian people.
The denial of the right to statehood for the Palestinian people would indefinitely prolong a conflict that has become a major threat to global peace and security, exacerbate polarization, and embolden extremists everywhere.
In Gaza, parents are saying it's becoming even harder to find medicine for their children. They suffer from a wide range of illnesses and are mostly now living in tent camps in the south of the Gaza Strip. Hospitals, if operating, can't cope as infection disease spreads. Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan has more.
Mother Mushira Abu Lebdeh says she sleeps in a tent with 10 others and no warmth. She is unable to find fever medication, antibiotics, or pain relief for her suffering children.
We give them syrup, but it is useless. Children will suffer until they die. Our life is a slow death. Children are dying slowly. Without treatment, this is a slow death.
It's a major concern as recent escalation of violence has exacerbated existing problems. Basic supplies like medicine and healthcare are almost impossible to come by. The World Health Organization says most of the enclave's 36 hospitals have stopped working. 15 are partially functioning, operating at up to three times their capacity, without adequate fuel or medical supplies, it says. Infectious diseases have also been spreading rapidly, including diarrhea cases among children under five. They say they are 20 times higher in November compared to last year. Dr. Emad Kabaje works at European Hospital in Khan Yunis. He told Reuters they have around 1,000 illness cases daily, with access to hospitals difficult for parents. He says they lose children every day due to basic medicine shortages. The situation now critical as temperatures drop in the winter months. A lack of proper housing and heating means families will be vulnerable to cold and pneumonia.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. And finally, tech startups are really hard to get up and running. You have to have a great pitch to get funding, no matter where you are. In Nigeria, tech startups are facing even more reluctance from investors after some prominent young companies shut down last year. Gibson Amika has this story from Abuja.
Kingsley Eze co-runs Naira Z, an e-commerce on-demand logistics startup in Abuja, Nigeria's capital. Despite its record of handling tens of thousands of successful requests, the firm has been largely funded by Eze as well as family and friends. Eze told VOA, even though he's ready for expansion, it's been difficult to secure financing amid the tales of failing startups in the country.
It's been very difficult to raise funds. Investors are cautious. The interest rate hikes in the Western economy is also a contributing factor to that, coupled with a lot of disappointing or not so good outing for a few startups that were like a beacon of hope for the Nigerian startup ecosystem.
Nigeria has been leading growth in African startups. Nevertheless, the sector faced a significant blow in 2023. Prominent startups such as 54Gene, LaserPay, Vibra, Payday, and Hitch went out of business largely over their inability to raise more capital to keep the companies running, losing over $70 million of foreign investors' funds. Abuja-based economist and investment expert Paul Alaji told VOA he blames the collapse on neglect of business principles.
Assumptions is a major bane to startup development in Africa, especially Nigeria. The fundamentals of traditional business or a growing business, economic principles behind traditional business should be neglected when it comes to startups.
A recent report by Brighter Bridges, a London-based business intelligence and research firm, showed a 54% drop in funding for startups between January and October of last year in Africa compared with the same period in 2022. Eze said he believes this will make it even harder to navigate the funding terrain.
Project a 60% failure rate for Nigerian startup companies, which is not a good bet for most investors. When everyone is succeeding in the market, it encourages more investors.
Elijah said Nigeria's business ecosystem needs an overhaul.
Bring new policies that makes it difficult for people who don't have idea regarding how business should be properly run. Two, show example of people that got it correctly, including Paystack. So we need to become more deliberate at all levels.
Paystack, a successful Nigerian payment processing company, was acquired by an Irish-American company for $200 million in 2020. According to the venture capitalists in Nigeria, poor infrastructure, lack of accountability by business owners, and the foreign exchange crisis aided the collapse of many startups. For his part, Eze said he will continue to build his business from the revenues it generates. For Gibson Emeka in Abuja, Nigeria, Salim Solomon, VOA News.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Soil is at the root of many pressing national security challenges that we face, declared Secretary of State Antony Blinken at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
Without good soil, crops fail, prices rise, people go hungry. Eroding soil also worsens the impact of droughts, of floods, of other climate-driven extreme weather, making crop yields even lower, and as a result, food even scarcer.
There are 700 million people presently who do not know if they will have enough food to eat tomorrow. That's why the United States has been working to tackle this food crisis and support those who are most affected by it, said Secretary Blinken.
Going back to January of 2021, the U.S. government has devoted $17.5 billion to provide vital sustenance to people in need. We are honored to fund over one-third of the World Food Program's budget.
The United States is also partnering to produce better, stronger, and more resilient crops. Indeed, the U.S. Agriculture Innovation Mission for Climate Initiative with the UAE has mobilized $17 billion to invest in efforts to regenerate degraded cropland and capture carbon in soil. Together with the African Union and the Food and Agriculture Organization, the United States has launched a new program called Vision for Adapted Crops and Soils, or VACS. It is part of the USAID's flagship Feed the Future initiative, explained Secretary Blinken.
This is our comprehensive response in the U.S. government to food insecurity around the world, and the approach that we have is two-pronged. And it really boils down to this, two very basic things. First, we're investing above ground, identifying the indigenous African crops that are most nutritious and most resilient to climate change, improving these varieties, delivering them to the world. At the same time, we're investing below ground, mapping, conserving, building healthy soils. If you get this right, if you get the seeds right, if you get the soil right, then you have your agricultural foundation for the future.
There are few things more important to humanity than figuring out how to cultivate this planet so that it can feed and support all of us, said Secretary Blinken. We have an opportunity in this moment to actually deliver better for people today while actually building a sustainable tomorrow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.